welcome to ESL Etc. My name is Dave. Please check out the website at ESLETC.com. There you can find a bunch of teaching materials, many of which are focused on bringing global issues and activism into the classroom, but also some regular ESL and EFL kind of activities too. You can find links to other resources, including teaching materials, professional organizations, articles, and stuff like that. And also, of course, there you can find the blog where I post resources that I come across as I come across them. What a novel concept for a blog. This week, to be totally honest, I wasn't going to do a podcast. Even when I woke up this morning, it's only about 6 in the morning here in China. And when I woke up this morning, I decided, okay, I don't really have a lot to say this week, so I'm not going to bother doing a podcast. As I mentioned previously, last week was a vacation, so I've only taught it's Wednesday morning, so I've only taught a couple of classes in the last 2 weeks, and I don't have a lot to say about my classes. I'm beginning a debate activity, and I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about that once I have a better idea of how it's going. I've just kind of introduced it and given the first week's homework, so I want to hold off on that. But when I woke up this morning, I listened to the pre-conference keynote for the K-12 online conference, and I decided, well, at least I'll make a short podcast to let people know about that, because I think it's an interesting thing. So the K-12 online conference, I just found out about it yesterday, but it's a conference basically for educators who are interested in using Web 2.0 tools and technology in their classroom, and to kind of help them to understand what do these tools mean for both their teaching but also for the kind of students that they have. Now, I'll be totally honest with you, that kind of stuff doesn't really interest me all that much. I'm not a big technology person. Well, I guess in my personal life, I kind of am. I'm kind of a computer guy. I'm competent with a lot of different kinds of software. Before I started using WordPress templates, I was hand coding my HTML in a text editor, so I'm pretty comfortable with technology. But that said, it's not a big part of my teaching, and it never really has been. I've used PowerPoint presentations. I've taken my students, when I was in Hawaii, I took my students to the computer lab to do a couple of internet activities where we were searching for information and looking critically at websites. But that's about the extent of it. Part of the reason, of course, is that other than a couple of years in Hawaii, I've never been in a situation where we had computers for the school or we had internet access. Certainly here, my school, as I've complained about on previous podcasts, we have a fair amount of technology, but a lot of it's broken and no one really knows how to use it. So it's effectively, we don't have it. You know, even though in the classroom there's a computer hooked up to a projector, the projector doesn't work right, there's no sound, and the computer's not hooked up to the internet, so who cares? But as I listened to this keynote presentation, he raises a lot of interesting ideas. And so I'm going to follow the conference. Oh, I should mention, basically what's going to happen, so there's a keynote presentation that was put up on Monday, October 8th. In America, which means it was put up Tuesday here in China. It's kind of an interesting idea. So they have the pre-conference presentation on Monday, and the rest of the presentations don't start until the following Monday. My thinking is that the reason they're doing that is to let this pre-conference keynote address go kind of viral, and so that they're hoping that teachers are going to kind of pass it around, and thus it will increase the presentation or it will increase the participation at the conference, which is, it's kind of a neat idea, and I think it makes a lot of sense, especially given the fact that this is, you know, about Web 2.0 stuff, and certainly viral marketing is a big part of that. I'll put a link in the show notes to the conference webpage. It's just k12onlineconference.org with no spaces or dashes or anything like that. And one thing that they're doing that's kind of neat is after they're putting each presentation online, I'm not 100% clear on this, but as I understand it, for 24 to 48 hours afterwards, they're going to have a chat room open. And what they encourage you to do is, as you're listening to it or as you're watching it, just kind of type your thoughts, and you can see the thoughts of other people. it's a little bit weird because I went to the chat room for the keynote and there's not any way to see who's in the room with you. So you're just kind of throwing thoughts out there and hearing thoughts back, and then it's like how a bat sees the world in a way. You know, you only know who's out there by what comes back. There also are some synchronous events. So there are some live events. First one is in about half an hour, and so I'm going to check that out. And it's what they call a fireside chat with the keynote speaker, whose name was David Warlick. And he's a teacher from North Carolina. I'm not sure what he teaches. I think now he's more of a presenter and consultant than a classroom teacher, but I'm not sure. Okay, well, let me just mention quickly a couple of the things that he talked about and that it seems like this conference is going to address that I think are interesting and important for us as English teachers, or at least for me as an English teacher. One of the things he talks about is, you know, the separation between the haves and the have-nots in terms of technology. For anyone who's teaching really anywhere in the world, even if you're teaching in America, that's a very apparent thing. You know, do our students have internet access? Do our students have their own computers? For me, in China, they certainly have not, right? The thing that's interesting, there are a lot of net cafes here, and students use them a lot, but they don't really use them to do anything quote-unquote productive. They play online games and chat with their friends and watch movies, okay? They haven't started to develop what David talks about in the presentation is the fact that it's not so much about having the technology, it's about having access to the networks and having access to the community and to the information and knowledge that those networks and communities possess. And so for my students, even though, yeah, they have some internet access, they don't really, because it's kind of newer maybe here in China, or because, as I'll talk about a little bit later, because of some of the lacks in Chinese education and those networks and communities don't exist for my students. I'm not saying there are no, you know, creative collaborative networks in China. Certainly there are. But I have never met a student who was engaged in those kind of things. They're just engaged at really, from what I've seen, kind of superficial, you know, games and stuff like that. The next point that was raised in the keynote presentation was that students learn from these kind of collaborative communities. And in a classroom, we cut these off. And I think that's a really interesting idea. I don't think it's really true here in China, but it does kind of ring true with what I imagine about American students, that they're used to kind of learning through these collaborative networks. And to expect them not to do that in class not only is a little bit unfair, but it's also unrealistic. You know, once they get out of their classroom, they're going to go back to learning that way. And when they're, you know, working in their job, they're going to learn that way. They're going to learn by, you know, emailing their friends and Googling different things and getting into different social networking sites that are related to those topics. So to expect them in the classroom to learn from a textbook is kind of meaningless and is kind of, you know, you're trying to teach them a way that people don't actually learn anymore or that people don't have to learn from anymore. There are other options now. And that brings us to something that it seems like it's going to be an important topic in this conference and is a very important topic for English teachers or for language teachers, and that's literacy. And something that he says in the keynote address is that to be literate, it's not only about reading and writing, as we know. You know, you have to be able to think critically about the information because there's so much information out there. You have to be able to organize it in some sort of useful form for yourself. And this is what is so supremely lacking for my students here. My students cannot do that at all. And I'm trying. You know, I'm trying to kind of take baby steps towards critical thinking, but it's very difficult to do that. It's very difficult to help someone to think critically when that concept is largely absent from the culture. It's not considered to be a good thing. It's not really talked about. There's still an underlying idea here that learning means memorizing, and that's how the whole education system is really focused. In college, it changes a little bit. College is supposed to be quote-unquote practical, but in real terms, it doesn't change. It's still about listen, repeat, and regurgitate is the educational model over here, which is obviously not critical and obviously doesn't work when you've got the modern problem of information overload. You know, if you're just trained to listen and remember, that doesn't help you when there's too much to listen to, because you need to be able to choose, what should I listen to? What do I want to remember? Simply listening and remembering, you're just going to have this kind of hodgepodge of whatever the loudest voices are, which is a horrible, horrible way to go through life, unless you want to be maybe a Fox television news presenter or something like that. Oh, goodness. It's early in the morning, like I said. In all seriousness, though, if you're just remembering the loud voices, your head's just going to be full of snippets of advertising and propaganda and whatever else dominates the mainstream media. Now, clearly in China, where they have a single-party government and media that's largely controlled by the government, that kind of makes sense. They don't want people who are going to question what they're told. But in terms of creating a generation of future leaders, of people that are going to help your country to succeed, it's really a suicidal educational model. Similarly, he says that writing is more than just writing a paragraph, which in an English classroom, a lot of times that's what we begin with, right? We begin with writing a paragraph, writing an essay. But for him, he says that writing is about producing an information product that can compete in the information saturated environment that we are in. Again, this is so over the heads of my students. My students don't have this experience. My students aren't blogging. They're not making MySpace pages. The extent of their information production is text messaging, either on their cell phones or in IM. And that's about it. And I don't think that that's ever going to really compete for anyone's attention other than the one or two people that you're directly communicating with. And it's, so my students can't write. My students can't write in Chinese. All my students can do in Chinese is cut and paste. You know, they take an idea from here, they take an idea from here, and they don't synthesize it. That's the difference, right? David Warlick refers to students as remixers of content. That's a great concept. I think that's a really accurate concept. That's what we all are, right? Anybody that's blogging or making podcasts, that's what we're doing. You know, the ideas that I'm talking about here, they're not coming out of a vacuum. I didn't just make them up. They're coming from things that I encounter. And then that's what blogs are full of. They're full of people pointing out links that they found and adding a little bit of interpretation or recommendation or whatever to remix the content a little bit. The problem with what my students do here, and the problem with students who are doing this without critical thinking skills, is there's no remixing. There is cutting and pasting, which, I admit, can look like remixing. The problem is that my students never synthesize the information. They never take it in, right? A student here, even in Chinese, most of the students here, they would write a paper, they would turn it in, you could ask them about the paper, and they would have no idea. None. They would have no idea about any of the meaning that they supposedly put together in this paper. And the paper wouldn't be gibberish, right? The grammar would line up. It would look like a real paper. But there would have been zero learning. That's a real systemic problem here. I mean, sometimes, to be honest, it makes me just have absolutely no confidence in the future of this country. I don't see where any good ideas are going to come from, because no one is being taught to be a critical, creative thinker. And without that, sure, you can copy, and maybe you can copy cheaper and faster than other countries for a while, but there's no future in that. I mean, Japan certainly found that out. You have to get into R&D. You have to get into creating things. And no one in China, I don't know where that impulse is going to come from. You know, they basically gutted the entire education system during the Cultural Revolution, which only ended 30 years ago. So where are these teachers coming from? There was no one to teach the teachers. And I don't know how that problem can be overcome, especially for a country as big as China. You know, you can't, because I admittedly, I'm sure there are some good teachers in China, but there are so few. And there are so many bad teachers here. So many, you know, people that are just reading textbooks. And when I listen to this conference and hear about how education is changing in other countries, like in America, it just makes me see how far behind China is. And I don't see how they're going to make up that ground, because there's not, like I said, there's not that initial critical mass of intelligent, critical, creative people to implement those changes. And there's also this huge bureaucratic infrastructure that creates this inertia, this paralyzing sludge for any change to try to get through. You know, no change is going to get through unless it enriches, I mean financially, each person along the rungs of the ladder. And for an educational change, that's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. The things that do enrich people, opening a lot of universities and filling them with warm bodies. And so that's what the Chinese education system is doing, and doing pretty successfully. They have a lot of universities, they open them all the time, and they fill them with students who are paying. But there's no real education happening at a lot of these universities. The last thing that he talks about that I thought was really interesting, and this is statistic is coming from him, so I can't vouch for its validity. He seems like a reliable guy, though. He says, in the U.S., 57% of teenagers have created digital content, published it online, and many of these have interacted with the audience. This is a real significant experience. This is a higher form of literacy than a lot of their teachers are going to have. How many teachers have published and gotten feedback from their peers? Certainly teachers who have presented at conferences, stuff like that, those of us who have blogs, stuff like that, but the percentage is going to be a lot lower for teachers. And that makes it... He takes the metaphor from Friedman's book, The World is Flat, about now the classroom is flat. It's not like one person has all the knowledge and is spilling it out to the students. So it's going to be more about, in his thinking, more about creating these kind of collaborative settings where students can learn from each other and learn from networks in the outside world, and the teacher just kind of facilitates that and steers them maybe a little bit and answers questions, which is interesting and parallels really well the way that I approach my language classroom. I don't think of myself as, you know, I'm going to stand in the front and I'm going to give them English. Instead, I see a big part of my role as creating an environment where they feel comfortable talking to each other, and I can answer questions as they come up, and I can give them things to talk about. And it's a much flatter picture of a language classroom than, you know, we would have seen a couple decades ago. But again, this idea that students are creating digital content and publishing it and interacting with people about it, totally alien to China. The percentage would be much, 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 much smaller here. You would have a very high percentage of teenagers who have consumed digital content, but I guarantee you the percentage of teenagers who have created it would be fractional. It would be really small. When I taught last year, I taught my students about blogging, just in a very simple way, and none of my students had ever heard of it before, let alone done it. And obviously, if you did that in an American classroom, an American college classroom, you'd have a very different result. So anyways, that's the keynote presentation. I strongly suggest checking it out and looking at the schedule, at least, to see if there's any conference sessions you're interested in. For me, there's a couple that I'm particularly interested in. Some of them deal with how to implement a Web 2.0 kind of classroom with very limited financial resources, because I think that's really appropriate and kind of necessary for a lot of developing countries. And then a couple others deal with copyright in the new environment, the new digital environment, and I'm personally interested in that. So I'm going to check out some of those. I'll probably end up listening to a lot of these presentations. I like listening to podcasts and radio shows, and these I think will be interesting enough that they might, for the next couple of weeks or so, kind of supplant my normal listening. Oh, a couple other things I want to mention this week. Just a couple other links to check out. I posted about these on the blog, so if you want more information on them, you can go there. But one is Globalization 101, and basically it's by the, I think it's the Carnegie Endowment, and they have a bunch of lesson plans there that are designed to get students thinking about the different sides of globalization and to think about the pros and cons, to think about the difficulties faced by policymakers. A lot of the activities are interdisciplinary, which is great for the language classroom because it means that a bunch of different language skills are going to be used. I haven't looked at it in great detail. One of the lesson plans that I did look at, though, for obvious reasons, is one about intellectual property, specifically stopping piracy in China. And I think the beginning of the activity, the vocabulary list and the opening activity, would be really great. Later on, it gets to be, for my students anyways, it gets to be too complicated and just too difficult conceptually. But I think the beginning of it is really useful. And so you can check out that website, check out that lesson plan, and maybe check out some of the other lesson plans and let me know if you think any of them are really good. The other thing that I want to mention, I feel like I mention this every week now, but I'm kind of learning as I go. I've mentioned Ning before, ning.com, and specifically the group EFL Classroom 2.0. Well, it was through that group that I heard about this K-12 online conference, and I've been kind of active there over the last week. And one thing that I did is I started my own group within that network. So if you go to EFL Classroom 2.0 at Ning, there's a Global Issues in English Language Education group that I started, and I'm hoping will become a place where teachers will share ideas, share materials, ask questions, stuff like that. So if you're interested in collaborating or just kind of communicating with other teachers, please check that out. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes. Well, this ended up not being much shorter than a regular podcast. Next week, I'll be back to talking about my teaching, probably. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, if you have any questions or comments, please visit the website at eseletc.com. You can email me at eseletc@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, and until next time, bye-bye.